Saturday Coffee. And it is the Saturday Coffee Clutch with Heather Lofthouse and yours truly, Robert Reich. Heather, what's going on this week? What are we going to be talking about?
Let's go. Let's talk about Trump and his ongoing attempted coup.
Okay.
And Biden and Netanyahu.
These are two very important topics.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I'm sorry to do this to everyone. And then we'll have some good news.
I want to get to the good
news as fast as possible.
Yeah. But with Trump's ongoing coup, I guess what you're referring to is that he is actually centering his campaign, which is now really in the general election, on what happened in 2020. I mean, he is telling all of his audiences, he's telling everybody in ads on and on, it's about him being, you know, the election being stolen from him.
It's constant. It is a barrage.
And
people believe it and they're into it. It's firing them up.
It's firing them up. But also, he's doing a second big lie, which is that the entire prosecution against him and the judges are against him, and it's all a matter of the Biden administration. And that is also fueling a great deal of anger and resentment and polarization in this country. And then he is threatening, literally threatening the judges. This is where we get all these gag orders. Put these together, Heather. This is a continuation of the attempted coup that was started right after the 2020 election. There's been no stop. This is really, you know, if it were me, I would say, let's amend the prosecution, the indictment against Trump, that is the attempted coup indictment, and include everything else.
Yep. Yep. Of the pie chart that represents how much of him, the parts of him that want to be president again, how much is just his megalomania? Curious. How much is he needs to be able to pardon himself, that he's actually worried about these cases? And how much is that he wants to be, you know,
rich.
Have, yeah, rich and have more power?
I would say 100%. I honestly think that unlike the 2016 election, even unlike the 2020 election, a big piece of this is Trump wanting to avoid prosecution.
Right.
He thinks, obviously, that if he's elected president, he can get rid of most of these cases. And also, he is worried about losing his fortune.
Right.
And he figures if he's president, he can make it back in many of the ways he did when he was president.
Now, the one we have to keep talking about him. But this is really feels like a criminal affair. I mean, it's a whole lot of people who are enabling him. He is the one. But there are also a lot of people behind the scenes and in front of the scenes.
This is the most difficult and distressing aspect of this entire politics we are entering, because the Republican Party, as now that we're in the general election, become clearly the party of Trump. There's purge in the Republican Party of anybody who is not a Trumper. Yep. And that means that you've got to buy into the big lie. So how, if you are trying to cover this election, if you are a major media, for example, how do you not have a big liar or a, you know, a proponent of the big lie on your program? How do you have any kind of discussion with the Republican Party? I mean, it used to be, I'm old enough, Heather, to remember that, you know, when the Republican Party was actually a legitimate political party. And then over the last few years, it's become a party that is no longer a governing party.
Right.
But now it's become a party that is a neo-fascist party. And that, obviously, it worries all of us.
Of course it does. One thing I'm excited about, if that's the phrasing, and it's not, is this Alvin Bragg case, right, which is about voter deception. Now, the media loves to call it the hush money case.
It's not a hush money case. I mean, it is a hush money case, but it's also about voter deception and interference in the election.
Yes.
If it were just hush money, you know, it would be a private matter. It sounds like, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed.
Right.
You're paying off somebody.
Right.
But no, this is a much bigger issue. This is about the 2016 election, and Trump might not have won.
And it's another lie. It was deception. It was not just paying off so no one says anything. It was so voters didn't know. So then you won an election. So you were kept in power. That's very different.
Exactly. And the question is how this is framed as this hush money, voter deception case comes into focus. If it's framed by the media as just hush money, it's not going to be nearly as powerful as if it's framed as it should be.
That's it. And we shall see. There will be a trial. There will be a jury of his peers, now, which is important.
Yeah, and many people are saying this is the least important of the four. And I understand that.
Yeah.
But it is very much related to the others.
And
particularly,
it's criminal, which matters to people, voters.
It matters to voters. Yeah. I think that if this trial is completed and if Trump is found guilty, it's going to be a major issue in the campaign.
Right. Now, another devastating thing that happened this week was the strike on the World Central Kitchen in Gaza by Israel. Can we talk about that? I know it's
it's particularly distressing. I want to make, you know, our opportunities to come together and have a discussion about what happened during the week ought to be fun and they ought to be uplifting.
Can't.
But
those
this
days
is,
are over.
But Heather, this is awful. I mean, Biden, by continuing to supply arms to Israel, has given away his major bargaining leverage with regard to Netanyahu. Biden keeps on saying, "I'm upset, and I'm setting red lines. I'm doing this and that." But Netanyahu basically is thumbing his nose at Biden.
I know, and feels like he still has our credit card to use.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is not only bad for Biden; it's bad for America. It's bad for it makes us complicit in the killing of 30,000 people, Palestinians in Gaza. It is, and many of them children. We've come to a point in this war, the Hamas war, where I think the United States really has got to say, now, this may not be a popular position, but I think we've got to say, no more armaments.
I know.
No more armaments, period, unless this war is stopped.
Right. Seven aid workers. I mean, there are these supposed rules of war, you know, and the aid workers getting the food out.
Well, there are no rules. I mean, what has happened, Israel's bombing of Gaza in a space that is very difficult for people to ever get out of, for one thing. I mean, that violates, arguably, the Geneva Conventions right there.
Right. Now, so then you see, not enough, by the way, but the media is covering these protests that are happening in Israel. So many people are out. They are mad at Netanyahu. They are mad at him, I think, in a way that many of us here are mad at Trump, because it feels like he's choosing himself over his country.
I hope that's the case in Israel.
Right.
Because a lot of people are saying Netanyahu needs the war that he has waged in order to stay in power.
Yep.
But I think that there may be a tipping point in Israel, too. I think a lot of the Israeli citizens from the news that we get are as upset as many Americans are. And many American Jews are also very upset about this. I mean, it's no longer a matter of, well, if you don't like Israel, you're anti-Semitic. I think a lot of people are saying, no, this goes way beyond Zionism or anti-Semitism. This is a matter of humanity, of just decency. And what Israel is doing is fundamentally wrong.
Right. And Israel isn't watching these protests. It's not just one, you know, homogenous thing where you're pro-Israel, you're anti-Israel. I mean, things are happening on the ground there and here in D.C. around this that is very nuanced, and more will be revealed.
Yes. Now, the trouble is to do anything that's nuanced in an election year, when you have 7 months before an election, really, if Biden does not stand up to Netanyahu in a highly visible, powerful, significant way, he's going to be losing a lot of voters.
Oh, I know.
And it could be that we get Trump. I mean, that would be the irony of ironies.
I don't even want to think about it. Okay. Well, let's have one in a semi-good piece of news. Let's have a moment of silence for No Labels.
No Labels.
It's
no longer with us. Well, I think that the third parties are dangerous for Biden and for the Democrats, because the Republicans who want Trump are solidly there.
Yeah.
I mean, these are true believers. They are part of a cult. Democrats are not necessarily with Biden if there is a realistic alternative. Now, there aren't realistic alternatives.
Right. So you get people not wanting to have to be stuck voting for one of two parties. I mean, you get that.
Well, people always, I can't tell you how many people write to me and say, look, I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils.
Right.
But what I say back to them is right now, in this coming election, that we're dealing with one real evil. And if you think that Biden is the lesser of two evils, at least understand that if you don't vote for Biden, you are voting for Trump.
Right. And the asterisk, too, is that it's not kind of a zero sum perfect playing field. There are MAGA Republicans who are funding this effort to try and get third parties. It's not just, oh, no, there's real third parties out there that you should vote for.
Absolutely. It's very, very strategic.
Yep.
In terms of what these third parties represent.
And the rigged Trump, in many
and,
ways.
And the Trumpers are in many ways behind these third parties. Yep. I mean, look who is actually supporting RFK Jr. I mean, these are some of the major Trump donors are behind him.
But I'm hoping that more, I mean, he really is out there in so many ways, science and otherwise. And I hope more will be exposed. I'm going to pepper in some hopes.
In some hopes, and I'm salting some hopes.
Yeah,
too. But the problem is that we're dealing with such tight, small margins, particularly in swing states. Wall Street Journal just did a poll showing that in the swing states, I mean, Trump wins. I think there's only in Wisconsin where is there a possibility for Biden. Now, again, we have to remind ourselves that polls this early don't mean very much. People have not focused their attention. But still, what worries me, Heather, frankly, is that there is a unanimity. The poll after poll after poll, particularly in the swing states, is showing Trump ahead.
Yeah.
So Biden and the Biden messaging have got to swing into action.
Yeah, they do. But I think can't get into all our topics, but abortion, I am hopeful. There are things we've seen in Alabama and state races. There are things happening in Texas. I mean, well, more will be revealed. I think I've said that 10 times already today. Can we talk about one thing that I think is good from the week that relates to labor? I'm not sure if you've...
Yes, there are a number of good things.
Right.
I mean, one thing is that California...
This is what I was going to say.
Well, go ahead.
No, you go. Okay, fine. California, no, you go.
California
has raised its wages
to $20 minimum wage for fast food workers.
It's fabulous.
And the fast food workers, you know, somebody came up to me 2 days ago. I was down in Santa Barbara and they said, oh, it's a terrible thing because we're going to lose competition. You can't be a fast food company and expect to be able to pay people $20 an hour. And I said, well, where are the fast food restaurants going to go?
Right.
They can't go to South Korea. They're not going to go. I mean, they are here.
Right.
Unlike a lot of your manufacturing companies, the fast food industry is the perfect industry to try and experiment, which is a minimum wage that is a living wage.
Yep. Well done, California. And also, $20 seems like a lot, I mean, ish to some people in that case. But it should be, the minimum wage should be much higher if it had kept up with
inflation. In California, and especially in California.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about $20. If you have a regular 40-hour work week, what is that? Do the math. You're the mathematician.
20 times 4, that's 8.
You're up for $40,000 a year. You can't do it in California.
You really can't. I know. But it should have been higher anyway. The jobs report, too, came out yesterday.
And that is very encouraging in terms of 300,000 new jobs. Now, it's a little worrying only in the sense that the Federal Reserve Board takes a look at all of these new jobs and says, well, we're not sure we're going to reduce interest rates all that fast, that quickly. The Fed obviously is not political. The Fed can do what it wants to do. But if it doesn't start reducing interest rates soon, then we have a drag on the economy and a drag on Biden.
Did you see this week? Billionaires. There are more billionaires dropping from the sky.
Well, they're not dropping from the sky, but you're right. There are more billionaires. And if you are a new billionaire and you are under 30, all of the new billionaires under 30, they're not entrepreneurs. They're not high tech. They're not.
Let me guess. They got it from their family.
They did.
They're heirs,
they did. They're
right?
Heirs.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning, Heather, of something that will get a lot of attention, I believe, has to. And that is the largest intergenerational transfer in history from rich boomers to their millennial children. And the, you know, the tip of the iceberg is all of these billionaire children.
I know. What are they going to, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if there's, you know, there's the giving pledge and there are these efforts where certain people say, you know, I'm a responsible billionaire. It'll be interesting to see how the 20-somethings and younger, they spend their wealth.
Well, I hope they spend it on a political movement to raise a wealth tax.
Love this idea.
So anybody out there who is under 30 and you're a billionaire, please.
You're surely watching us for sure. So thank you for watching.
Start a movement and finance it to raise the wealth tax, particularly on billionaires like yourselves.
Are you going to go see the eclipse?
No.
Why not?
I'm going to wait till the next eclipse, which is 2044.
Oh,
let's say 20 years from now, I'll still be around.
Yeah.
And I have too much else to do. And are you going to watch the eclipse?
I am not, but we have so many friends and family and our colleagues are off to Texas and
Little Rock. I have a number of people who told me that they're going to be in Little Rock, Arkansas.
In Ohio. I have some friends going to Ohio. But I think the weather is such that there will be cloud cover. I don't quite know.
Can you imagine going to Little Rock or going to Ohio, and having...
Careful. Michael and our team is from Ohio.
And having just, you know, cloud
for
cover.
Not.
And you're out there with your glasses and your special...
Well, you don't have to wear glasses. Remember Trump? He looked right at the sun as he was drinking his bleach to get rid of his COVID.
Oh, I think it's a perfect. I mean, he in all ways has been a model for America.
But if you are going to see the eclipse, we hope you get to actually see it. Wear the glasses. Don't hurt your eyeballs.
Yes. Be very, very careful. And
tell us about it in the comments because we're not going to see it.
And on that upbeat note, I hope you have a great week, even if you are not in that 120-mile belt, which is the eclipse belt that goes across America. I hope you have a good week, a safe week, and we'll see you next week.